Greetings again, my dear wonderful sisters and brothers of the human family, my dear wonderful sisters and brothers of the Uhuru family. This is Deacon Christopher Frazier. I am your minister of information. I am the Christian ambassador of the Rastafari movement. This is for the recording date of Sunday, June the 9th, 2013. All right, so remember what we said about the book of Revelation, which was a warning to the human family about Rome, about the Pope, about Vatican City, about Europe, about how they would and to this day continue to colonize, enslave, and exploit, thieve land, wealth, and resources, warfare, bloodshed, death, hell, destruction. Now, what's interesting is there is prophecy about how these wicked ones would be imprisoned for 1,000 years. Rome would lose power and be destroyed for 1,000 years. That is seen. We're given a sign of that reality, I would say, in this manner. I believe it's Genghis Khan from Asia began to beat back Rome. And we know Islam and Prophet Muhammad began to beat back Rome, beat back colonialism. And so for nearly 1,000 years, we see that Rome disintegrated. The power of Rome dissipated. And the European tribes, they weren't fully nations yet, but the European tribes and they who were a part of the Roman Empire went into the Dark Ages, went into the time of ignorance, the time of disease, the time of continuous warfare and bloodshed and destruction of each other. During this time of 1,000 years, you have those outside of Europe thriving, sharing education and information, sharing symbolism and rituals with each other, sharing wealth and land with each other. Do we say there were no problems in the places outside of Europe? No, we do not. But we do say and know and understand that education and healthcare and those benefits that come with having interaction with knowledge and wisdom were flourishing all over the earth outside of Europe. But then we come to the Crusades around 1200, is it? Something like that. And the battle for Jerusalem over and over again between the Christian forces out of Europe under the leadership of the Pope of that day, the European Roman Pope, and you have the jostling back and forth between Christianity and Islam over Jerusalem. Finally, there is a time period that Rome, through the Christian nations and Christian soldiers, captured Jerusalem. And finally, you see that in the 1500s, Europe in general, Spain, Portugal, Britain, France, Belgium, Rome, all of them come out and begin to colonize the globe. They begin to colonize Africa, colonize Asia, colonize Central and South America, colonize the Isles of the Pacific and the Caribbean. But it's interesting that while everyone is being colonized, Ethiopia remains free from colonialism. Ethiopia, the oldest nation on the planet. Ethiopia, the oldest Christian nation on the planet. Ethiopia, that root nation that has given us our religion and science and knowledge and wisdom, the mother and father of Egypt, Kemet, is Ethiopia. And Ethiopia remained not colonized, remained free from colonialism. But look, Rome, by this time that we're getting into, colonized Eritrea, an area outside of Ethiopia proper. And in 1896, Rome said, you know what? We want Ethiopia. The Pope at that time, was it Julius the 10th? I can't remember exactly, but the Pope at that time, whichever his name was, approved Rome moving on Ethiopia. And let me say this. You have in the 1860s, the Berlin Conference, okay? Now, Europe had been colonizing and killing and destroying the indigenous peoples of the earth, black, brown, red, and yellow. But they began to have some infighting amongst themselves. Their colonialism began to be disorderly, and the European nations began to squabble and argue with one another. So they had a conference in Berlin. I believe it was in the years of around 1864, the 1860s, so that they could come together and organize their colonialist ways, organize colonization, organize colonialism, so that they wouldn't fight and kill each other. And so now, after this organizing of colonialism, and the Pope was there, if not in person, through representation, the Pope was in Berlin, Germany, and the German Kaiser was there in Germany, in Berlin, and America sent a representative because they agreed. The rulership or leadership of the United States of North America agreed with all of this colonialism, slavery, and exploitation. And so, out of this, you have the official drawing of the map that we have of Africa and even Asia and Central and South America and so on. But let's focus on Africa. These boundaries that we see were drawn in the Berlin Conference. So France took a portion. I believe there was a portion of the Congo called the French Congo. You had the British Congo. You had Belgium taking a portion of the Congo. You had France and Portugal and Spain and Rome taking various portions of Africa for themselves, drawing various boundaries for themselves. And Rome had already taken or was about to take Eritrea, drawing that boundary. And now Rome sets their eyes on Ethiopia. You see, Ethiopia, the oldest Christian nation on the planet. Ethiopia rumored to have the Ark of the Covenant. Let me try to hit this history. You have, in the days of Solomon, you have Queen of Sheba coming from Ethiopia, Arabia, down into the African Hebrew Israelite nation. You have Queen of Sheba falling in love with King Solomon, both of them African, both of them Ethiopian. The Rastafari have long said the Hebrews and the disciples Ethiopian, dreadlocked, bearded man. Seeing? All right. So you have Queen of Sheba coming to her people in this sense that we're talking about. Another tribe, another nation, but both of them having an Ethiopian root, okay? So the Ethiopian Queen of Sheba, Queen of Arabia, Queen of Sheba, queen of Ethiopia, this beautiful sister, queen of Sheba, coming to King Solomon, wanting to see how wise Solomon was, this African Hebrew Israelite brother. And they began to build a relationship, fall in love, have a child. Is it Menelik the First? This child, Menelik the First, product of the union of Queen of Sheba and King Solomon. And so Queen of Sheba goes back home to Ethiopia, gives birth to Menelik the First. Menelik the First, when he comes of age, wants to visit his father, King Solomon. He does so, and he brings a number of Ethiopian brothers with him to Jerusalem, to the African Hebrew Israelite nation. And he says, you know what? I love you, Dad, but I'm not going to hang with you. I'm going to go back home to Ethiopia. And as he leaves Jerusalem, the African Hebrew Israelite nation, he takes the Ark of the Covenant with him. That Ark of the Covenant that we have talked about over the last periods of time, giving the symbolism of the Ark of the Covenant, breaking it down, showing that Egypt is the root of the covenant and the Holy of Holies and the temple and the mercy seat and so on, knowing now that Ethiopia is the root of all of that knowledge and wisdom and understanding. So this Ark of the Covenant, this promise that the Most High will deliver, this symbolism that the Most High would deliver the masses of the people from all oppression, Menelik the First takes the Ark of the Covenant with him back to Ethiopia. So the Christian world and the Jewish world of Europe say that the Ark of the Covenant is in Ethiopia. So you have all of this ancient knowledge and wisdom and understanding and symbolism there in Ethiopia. Well, Rome wants all of that. The Pope, Vatican City, Rome wants all of that. So they determine to go after Ethiopia and colonize Ethiopia and get all of that that we have spoken of. And finally take the whole of Christian authority out of Ethiopia. Maybe even dissolve the Pope of Ethiopia and dissolve the African Ethiopian church and set up their own in Ethiopia and change even the depictions on various buildings and temples in Ethiopia of black angels and black Jesus and show the African Yahushua. We see the African Yahushua, Jesus Yahushua Christus with a sword in among the seven stick candelabra, showing the symbolism of the sun representing the Christ going through the seven pole stars over 26,000 years of movement of the sun in the various houses of the zodiac in a counterclockwise procession. So all of that African symbolism, the sword of justice and truth and righteousness, and the seven stick candelabra representing the light of knowledge and wisdom and understanding, and representing Mother Holy Spirit and that burning flame of truth, justice, and righteousness. Rome wants all of that. And so Rome attacked Ethiopia in 1896. But Menelik II, I believe he was the uncle, half uncle of Haile Selassie. And so Menelik II defeated Rome and beat back Rome. And so Rome is angry. Rome is upset. Now we have in 1892 the birth of Haile Selassie. Now Haile Selassie or Haile Selassie is not his birth name. His birth name is Tafari. Lige Tafari Makonnen. I hope I'm saying his last name correctly. Makonnen. Lige Tafari Makonnen. All right. And when he was born, he was baptized, according to some information that I have, he was baptized Haile Selassie. And the words Haile mean, the word Haile means might, power, or glory. And Selassie means the Trinity. These are Ethiopian Amharic words or Amharic words. And another book I have, the black people or the Africans who wrote the Bible. In that book, let me try to write this down. Maybe I'll reference this in my summary. The Africans who wrote the Bible, we learn that Amharic or Amharic is the mother tongue and language of the Hebrew Aramaic. So we're tying this all together with history, trying to understand the true history, the true history of the human family. Look, this is 2013, sisters and brothers. This history is not only for black. It is not only for brown, red, and yellow. This history is for Caucasian, so-called white sisters and brothers as well, because all of us must go back into our history as a human family, go back into our history and understand the truth of our history, overturn the lies and the fictitious narrative, not so that we may have enmity between each other, not so that we may have animosity between each other, but so that we may have unity based on truth, justice, and righteousness. So Ethiopia, the Amharic language, the Amharic language of Ethiopia, the mother language of Aramaic, and the mother language of the African Hebrew and African Aramaic, and the mother language of Kemet, Ethiopia, and the mother language of Arabic, because African Arabic is a daughter or son language of the mother and father African Aramaic language and African Hebrew language. So we trace it all the way to the root of African Ethiopian Amharic or Amharic. All right. So this baptizing of Tafari or Tafari Makonnen, Lige Tafari Makonnen, is prophecy. It portends and foretells that this baby would grow up into his power, into his might, into the glory of the Trinity. See, this is also prophecy of you and me. All of us are the might and power and glory of the Trinity when we understand who we are and our mission to stand up for freedom, justice, and equality. When we understand that we are children of the Most High Father and Mother, then we become sons and daughters and represent the Trinity as might and power and glory of the Trinity. Jesus is you. Yahushua is you. Haile Selassie is you. Stop arguing about the divinity of Haile Selassie and understand that Haile Selassie represents your divinity. Begin to reason with one another about our own divinity, our own reality as gods and goddesses in human flesh. All right, now we come up to 1914 and World War I, and we come up to setting up the train of events leading to the coronation of Haile Selassie and leading to World War II. But World War I, why did that begin? You see, they had the Berlin Conference to organize colonialism, slavery, and exploitation for the benefit of the European colonial powers. They had the Berlin Conference so that the European powers wouldn't kill each other, but so that they could better kill African people, and other than Europe, kill Asian, kill yellow man in Asia, kill brown man in Japan, kill brown man in Central and South America and Mexico, because America was there. America is colonizing Central and South America and Mexico. What they call that the Manifest Destiny and the Monroe Doctrine, calling the Central and South America and Mexico the backyard of the United States of North America. And so we say once again, the leadership of America had representation at the Berlin Conference, and all of them are working together to organize this thing so that the European powers in America don't kill and destroy each other, but that they can be better organized to kill and destroy black, brown, red, and yellow, African, Middle Eastern, Asian, Central, South American, Mexico, Isles of the Pacific, and the Caribbean. But it didn't work. Because we see by the time we get to 1914, we have the Oppenheimers on the scene in Southern Africa. We have the Oppenheimers going after the diamonds. We have the Oppenheimers displacing the Rhodes Diamond Company and the Rhodes Rhodesia and his hold on the diamond industry. We have the Oppenheimers now ready to move on Germany. Germany was colonizing and killing and destroying. They were in Namibia. And so the Oppenheimers began to move on Namibia, move on the German territory, stolen land in Namibia, with the help of the House of Rothschild and the British Crown and the British armies. They move on Germany and take Namibia from Germany. All of them killers, all of them colonizers and destroyers. And see, the House of Rothschild that we talk about, they began to take prominence in the 1800s and probably before then, 1700s. And they began to run the slave system, run this whole system of death, hell, and destruction. They begin to control and manipulate all the powers, financing all sides, fomenting and creating warfare and bloodshed. They were behind the Civil War, financing the North and the South. They probably were behind the War of Revolutionary Independence from America and Europe, or America and Britain, because they don't care who wins and loses wars. The House of Rothschilds only want to control the purse strings. They love warfare and bloodshed, because through warfare and bloodshed, they can take control of land, wealth, and resources, and kill and destroy human beings and lives in the process because of their philosophy of eugenics. So the House of Rothschild, financing all sides in the lead up to World War I, financing all sides and arming all sides in the lead up to World War I. So you have Germany losing their territory in Southern Africa, Namibia, because of the diamonds, and the Oppenheimers moving with the help of the Rothschilds and the British Crown on Germany. This is what caused, in addition to whatever else caused, this is what caused World War I. Land, wealth, resources. No little assassination of some little diplomat someplace. No, land, wealth, resources, diamonds. In the House of Rothschild, wanting to kill and destroy and control land, wealth, resources, and territory, arming all sides and financing all sides. This is what caused World War I. So Germany loses. Germany is destroyed. Germany is so destroyed. Oh man, totally depleted and destroyed and broken. You see, this is setting up World War II, because the way that World War I was ended was in such a manner that you knew that Germany was going to come back and there would be a World War II. Total destruction and annihilation of Germany. But we see the continued colonization, colonialism, but Ethiopia remains free of colonialism and colonization. Now, we have the formation of the League of Nations in this interim time period between World War I and World War II. The League of Nations is supposed to be it is literally the precursor to the United Nations. And in the League of Nations, if you were a member of the League of Nations, no member of the League of Nations could allow you as a member of the League of Nations to suffer aggression, especially from another member of the League of Nations. The other members of the League of Nations, signing the Charter of the League of Nations, promised to protect each other from aggression. This was only for European nations. This was not to be for any nation outside of Europe. But we know that it was full of hypocrisy. So you have the League of Nations and the Charter of the League of Nations to protect nations from aggression. Now we have the coronation of Lij Tafari Mekonnen as emperor and king of Ethiopia in 1930, the crowning of Lij Tafari Mekonnen. So when Lij Tafari Mekonnen takes the throne or ascends the throne, he acquires the title of Haile Selassie, and he acquired the title of Ras years ago, I believe around 1926, when he became a mayor of a particular province in Ethiopia. Ras means head. And so he had the title Ras. So you say Rastafari. And then in 1930, when he becomes leader and ruler of the whole of Ethiopia, officially takes the title of Haile Selassie, the same title used to baptize Lij Tafari Mekonnen when he was born. So he is officially known to the world, the peoples of the earth, as Haile Selassie, the first of Ethiopia, the King of Kings, Lord of Lords, conquering lion of the tribe of Judah, in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, November 2nd, 1930, the 225th king in the 3,000-year-old Solomonic dynasty, stretching from Solomon and Sheba all the way through to this time of Haile Selassie I. Let's take this next break, and I will see you on the other side of the break.